Hi, I'm Dr. Robin Koslowitz, clinical psychologist, parenting educator, and post-traumatic parent. Welcome to the Post-Traumatic Parenting Podcast, where we learn to provide our children with a healthy childhood, even if ours was anything but. Or maybe we had a wonderful childhood, but recent events in our lives have left us reeling. Let's face it, after 2020, we're all post-traumatic parents now. Welcome. I just finished an incredible interview with Dr. Nikki Pensack, the author of Rattled, and I'm just processing our conversation. One of the most important things about our conversation, I think that's super important to highlight, is both Nikki and I have PhDs in clinical psychology. Both of us have degrees from really impressive institutions. Nikki is Yale and Harvard trained. I have my PhD from NYU. We both have postdoctoral training. We both have a lot of experience dealing with mental health, with psychology, with understanding the psychology of women, understanding trauma, understanding emotions. And yet both of us had the same experience of matrescence, which is giving birth and having a baby and becoming a mother is a normative trauma in and of itself. So if you're struggling as a new parent, or if you're looking back at your years as a new parent and thinking, why was that so hard? I just felt on the edge of disaster at all times. My mood was difficult. Everything was so difficult. What am I doing wrong? What do I not know about being a mother? If I had a PhD in clinical psychology, I would be able to do all of this. That's simply not true. Matrescence is a normative trauma. And you are not immune from your hormones and your entire brain having this imperative to keep a small human alive and how scary and difficult that is. No matter how much training and knowledge you have, matrescence is traumatic, and that's okay. And I think that's the best thing about Nikki's book, is that it really aggregates the research and normalizes what matrescence is about. The second thing that I really took away from this interview was that idea of self-directed neuroplasticity, that when you become a mother, your brain is neuroplastic. It's open to all sorts of growth and changing and neural reorganization. And that self-directed neuroplasticity, if handled properly, can really lead to post-traumatic growth. You're open and ready to learn new patterns when you become a parent. So that was the second thing, that something I've believed always, but I really saw laid out in the research in Nikki's book. The third really important takeaway that I got from this book is owning it. That, yeah, there might be a resume gap. Yeah, you might have quote unquote mommy brain, but that's not a disadvantage. That's an advantage. Becoming a parent is like going to emotional intelligence boot camp. Becoming a parent is like taking off time to go to some spiritual retreat. Becoming a parent teaches you so much. So don't apologize for those gap years on your resume, or don't apologize for your mommy brain when you have different priorities. Instead, own it, because this is a strength. I really hope you're going to enjoy listening to this interview as much as I enjoyed recording it. For those of you who are new to the post-traumatic parenting community, remember that we now have a YouTube channel. Check out the Post-Traumatic Parenting YouTube channel, where we have some really great interviews and deep dives into really visual topics like, why do post-traumatic people love horror movies? Or what are the best memories of traumatic childhood memoirs that I've read recently? Or reactions to recent events in the news. I cannot wait to hear your reactions to those. And as always, check out the post-traumatic parenting community. You can find us on Instagram at Dr. Koslowitz Psychology. Happy listening. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Post-Traumatic Parenting Podcast. I am so excited to have this conversation. I am talking to Dr. Nikki Pensack. Some of you have seen me repost her stuff on Instagram. She is an author of an incredibly important book. Her book is called Rattled. It is all about what the new mom brain and the experience of life with the new mom brain, and especially that concept of matrescence, which we're going to talk about. She also has a fantastic TED Talk about becoming a mom and post-traumatic growth. and what that experience is like that everybody should check out. It was at TEDx Bethesda. You should just Google it and check it out because it's fantastic. If you're not already following her on social, check her out. Her book is so practical and also so normalizing, where she really helps everyone understand this thing that for some reason, if, and maybe this is like a female thing, but like if this would happen to guys, I feel like we would so normalize the incredible upheaval that is new motherhood. But because it's women, it's just like, oh, you had a baby and like come back to work in 6 weeks and like, you know, oh, mommy brain, right? And that's just how we talk about it, as if this isn't the world's biggest upheaval. So I'm super excited to hear the research on all of that. Nikki, tell me about your book.
Sure. So it's Rattled. It's How to Calm New Mom Anxiety with the Power of the Postpartum Brain. And I wanted to really write this book to empower mothers to see becoming a mother and the postpartum phase as an opportunity for growth and development. I mean, researchers at Yale have now deemed that becoming a mother is its own neurodevelopmental phase, and it's labeled matrescence. And so I think solidifying and giving it that term, that name, really empowers women to understand, you know, that this is important. It's like adolescence. Adolescence, you go through major brain changes and neurodevelopment and emotional development, but that happens over a much longer period of time. In matrescence, it's condensed. It's very quick. I say that physiologically, you become a mother very quickly, right? But psychologically, it can take mothers a little longer to catch up to that because there's just development in all areas.
Because when you're giving birth to a baby, you're giving birth to a mother. And one of the things I believe is a question that comes up in post-traumatic parenting a lot, which is, I feel like even in the most ideal, wonderful circumstances, becoming a mom is a trauma. If we define trauma as something that's too big, too fast, too much to metabolize for your brain, then it's traumatic simply from that. It's not like you had to have birth trauma for it to be a trauma, or some crazy story had to happen in the operating room. It is a trauma.
Right. So I talk about that in the book as well. I call it a normative trauma. There was a great researcher at Yale that really deemed that term normative trauma because it's just a complete upheaval of everything.
And it happens so fast.
And it's common, right? Like we have a lot of mothers out there and it's just a normative process, but it is in fact traumatic in that sense. Not to mention the birth trauma that can happen in, you know, 13% to 46% of mothers. Like you said, post-COVID parents are dealing with trauma. Mothers that had their first babies during COVID that are now having their second babies are actually going through that re-traumatization and experiencing trauma for themselves a second time because they weren't able to process.
So a lot of your TED Talk, and I'm sure in the book, you talk a lot about the post-traumatic growth that the mommy brain gives us. Can you tell us about that?
So in matrescence, when the process goes right, I think it can go really right. Becoming a mother is an incredible opportunity for transformation, growth, making meaning out of things. It just can shift your whole perspective. And then emotionally, I think there can be a lot of growth there as well. And so with post-traumatic growth, I think of it both from the normative trauma, post-traumatic growth experience, but also from the birth trauma experience. And so what that means is that for the process to go right, mothers need to have solid postpartum mental health care. They have to have their mental health intact to experience post-traumatic growth, right? And I think there are opportunities for that with therapy if you have a birth trauma or, you know, a traumatic experience prior to birth as well.
Can I interject there? I think this is where post-traumatic parents really need to hear that, because a lot of post-traumatic parents are coming in either with full-blown PTSD or post-traumatic stress symptomatology, stuff from our childhood that maybe we resolved, but in an unhealthy way. Like, let's say you've resolved, your trauma tells you that, like, when someone criticizes me, double down on perfectionism, or when I'm feeling vulnerable, I'm going to hide. And that really works, right? I'm going to people please. That works great. Let's say you have your first baby in your late 20s and your whole early 20s, that really works. You have a toxic boss. So every time the boss gets mad at you, you do exactly what they want. And then you get that grudging approval and you think, oh, I've handled my trauma from my childhood. Like I figured this stuff out. When I feel stressed, I people please. This is great. Then you have a baby And all of a sudden you can't, because you're either going to be saying no to your kid or your boss. You cannot be that perfect employee you were. And that might be wife, and that might be girlfriend, and that might be daughter-in-law, and that might be neighbor or friend. You can't do those things, those coping skills. If your coping is 2 hours of Netflix after work with a bottle of wine, that's not compatible with an infant. Nothing wrong with that, but it's not compatible with taking care of an infant.
100%. And so even if you have worked through a lot of the trauma, or maybe you're coping with it in healthier ways, you know, motherhood will just shake you up, right? And it'll confront you with all of those issues, some that you didn't even know you had, right? It's sort of like, you know, unearths these dynamics from early childhood. And it doesn't have to be even full-blown PTSD symptoms, but it could just be little t, right? From that chronic stress or for a neglectful caregiver. But like, it wasn't like a car accident when you were younger.
Right. It's not the dramatic stuff that like would have the soundtrack in the movie. It's the daily stress of living with something or without something that you needed.
Exactly. And I think when you become a mother, when you become a parent, you become more aware of that, how you were parented, how you, you know, were taken care of, how you were attached or not attached. And so I think it's really an opportunity, because it's all new learning when you become a parent, when you become a new mother. And I always say that it's an opportune time to be in therapy, because guess what? Because it's all new learning, your brain is primed for learning. So why not sneak in, not even sneak in, but make it a priority to learn more about yourself and to have self-growth while you are learning about, you know, your new baby and the whole process of taking care of a completely dependent person.
Right. It's why toddlerhood and adolescence is a great time to do social and emotional learning, because we're figuring the world out anyway. We might as well learn about emotions, right? A two-year-old can learn about, I'm so excited, I'm so scared, right? They can learn that stuff. Teenagers are learning about themselves. They're curious. Their brains are pruning and like regrowing and reorganizing. Might as well teach them about the social world, because that's actually the most useful, like emotional intelligence is the most useful thing. Same thing with becoming a mom. You're right. It's such an opportune time. If you've never done it before, like, now is the time.
Exactly. But there are so many roadblocks and barriers, right? So I think of all the potential that the maternal brain has and the development of a mother has. But we have, you know, a maternal mental health crisis in the United States. We have mortality and morbidity rates that are way too high. We have lack of financial support, right? Lack of maternity leave. And just stigma and biases about mothers returning to work. I mean, we just are always, it seems like, running uphill, right? Or trying to fight against the current. And so to understand what the roadblocks are and how to navigate them is really important, you know, prophylactically from the beginning, right? Set yourself up for success as best you can. And so in Rattled, that's my aim, to sort of lay it out for you. Like, these are the potential roadblocks. This is how we should go into it. You can't control whether you get postpartum or not. Like, your brain may want to do this thing. You may have risk factors that make you more vulnerable. However, if you have the supports in place, you can limit to the extent that damage can be done and move forward into post-traumatic growth. I experienced that as well. I went from rock bottom to post-traumatic growth in a relatively short period of time, because I followed my own advice and I had my solid postpartum treatment team, you know, laid out for me, and my mental health plan laid out for me.
Because you knew to do that.
But I never thought I would need it. I was one of those, I was like, I'm a clinical psychologist. I'm an expert in treating this. I'm sort of immune to this. Like, it's not going to happen to me. But part of me said, well, I'm going to do this anyway, just in case. Like, this is what I advise my patients. And I had my mental health team in place telling me the exact same things as well. And thank God, because with my second baby, he was in the NICU for 5 weeks. 2 weeks after he was discharged, we were on lockdown from COVID. I feel like every strategy, I'd already become a mom, I'd gone through that transformation, but it's like, every safety net I had was pulled out from under me.
Yeah, I've been there.
It was incredibly traumatic.
It really is. And I think that we very often, those of us in the helping professionals and a lot of people in the post-traumatic parenting community, are clinicians who have experienced it and are also helping people with it or just want to understand this. So many of us think like, oh, I'm in the helping field, so I don't need help. And it's almost like physician heal thyself, right? Like there's nothing else. Because, yeah, I can't look in the mirror and do therapy. It's nice to journal. You know, all those things are great, but I actually have to do the work.
Yes. And you can't treat yourself.
Right.
And you need real treatment if you have postpartum. The good news is that we have evidence-based, solid postpartum mental health treatment. I think we're going to keep getting better options and better, but we're still, you know, not catching all of the women that we should be catching and men. And so I think that, unfortunately, one of the other downsides is that the onus still falls on the mother to sort of set up her own mental health care and follow through and attend the appointments. And we need to advocate for some seamless standard of care where that does happen, where there's like this seamless transition to mental health care after you have a baby, but we're not there yet. And so my goal in Rattled was to sort of lay that out very clearly. Like, here's what you need to do to put that in place.
Right. And it's also, and it's so helpful because I think the normalization is still big. I still think as much as we've maybe destigmatized certain aspects of mental health and like we've, you know, talk about it so much more on social media, there's still that like deep down mom shaming idea that if you loved your baby enough, you wouldn't have postpartum depression.
100%. And so part of me writing this book was also sharing my personal narrative and story with it to help to decrease the stigma. I mean, my academic research centered around caregivers, right? And then when I became a mom, I realized mothers are the ultimate caregivers, but I had all this academic research and expert in caregivers. And then in my clinical practice, treating moms with postpartum and anxiety and depression. And I trained at some of the nation's top academic institutions. You know, I had great training, great career success up to that point. And I wanted everyone to understand that like nobody's immune. And so anyone can get postpartum.
Anybody can. And also, even if you don't get like full-blown postpartum depression, there's still just post-traumatic struggles. It's really hard. Your brain is trying to both deal with all of these hormones and all of, like you're saying, the neural reorganization that becoming a mother does and learning a really difficult skill set. And there's so much, should my kid be nursing? Should I use organic diapers? Should I be sterilizing nipples? Should I, like, there's just information, and kind of sorting it through is really difficult when there's a screaming baby that you're holding with one hand.
100%. And it's relentless. It's not that you get a break. It's like there's one challenge after the next, and you can recover from one, but then there's another one just waiting for you because it's a 24/7 job.
It is a 24/7 job. And it's, I think, any other 24/7 job, like you're saying about caregivers, you know, mothers are the invisible caregivers. Like, we understand the concept of like a home health aide who's taking care of a person with Alzheimer's, that's a really hard job. Right. But that's what taking care of a baby can be like. Yeah, they're cute. And yeah, there's rewards. But there's also the relentless 24/7 onness of the job. And every time you master a stage, they're at the next stage.
Yeah. Not to mention the unrealistic expectations that mothers put in themselves because of the ideal image of the mother in society. Right. What are we seeing in the media? I think we're getting a little better at sort of sharing some of the realities of motherhood and that both can be true. Like, we can love our baby and it can be incredibly challenging and hard, and we can be overwhelmed and overstimulated. But there's still that stigma and there's still those images and messages of perfectionism, right?
Yeah. And I think there's also something about social media where, like, the perfectionism, especially, you're trying to be the best of everybody's curated feed. But like, this person's a great organic cook for toddlers, and that person has a gorgeous playroom, and that person knows how to get her babies to fall asleep right away. And, you know, and like, you're trying to be all of those things. And that person looks awesome 24 hours after giving birth, right? You can't be the best of everyone, right? You're going to compare yourself to the best of everyone. Forget it.
Right. But I think also, especially after COVID, that's what we had. We had our social media. That's the way that we connected with others. But this is also what we're seeing. So it's like a double-edged sword.
I just love how much you're normalizing how difficult it really is that we just don't look at. We don't really say like, this is so hard. We just sort of like, okay, 6 weeks later, you're back at work and just bring your pump and, you know, and like, yeah, it's great that now we have pumping rooms at big businesses. That's fabulous. But like that wasn't a given until very recently is scary.
I know. 100%. I don't know about you, but before I became a mother, there wasn't much discussion about what that transformation would be like. And I think that might vary, you know, from family to family. But in my experience, it was sort of like not discussed. And you became a mother and it's like, oh, I'm just supposed to know how to do this. Like, I'm supposed to automatically know how to breastfeed, and bonding with my baby comes immediately. When throughout my process, I was like, wait a minute, even though I wanted to breastfeed, my firstborn was born premature. And so there were unexpected issues with like latching and even staying awake while feeding, and that I had to navigate. And I wouldn't have been able to prepare for that ahead of time. There are just so many things that come up. You're like constantly rising to every relentless challenge. And so it's an incredible opportunity to learn and develop and grow and become more resilient, right? But yeah, it is very tough.
And if you have those things from your childhood where people told you something about yourself, like you're too lazy or you're not good at this or you're not good at that or you're irresponsible, and you think you've resolved it, but then you become a mother. I know for me, I had a relatively significant voice in my childhood, thankfully not a parent, but still somebody who, like, their words struck deep at a time when I was, you know, young and vulnerable, telling me that I wasn't feminine enough, right? And that this was going to be a problem in my life. And that, like, you know, even if you want to be smart, you have to know how to be feminine. And when I had my oldest daughter and breastfeeding was hard, right? Nursing is just a hard thing to learn. And I happened not to have enough milk. I historically never did. Now I, of course, sort of like, okay, so I can give a bottle. It's fine, you know? But at the time, I was like reading a lot about the benefits of nursing and, you know, and I was really like all into it and I was trying. And then my baby just wasn't eating. All those voices that I thought I had really successfully resolved. See, even my baby knows I'm just not maternal enough. And I remember going to a professor of mine, Esther Buckles, a very wise woman. She had actually studied with D.W. Winnicott. So she was like a real old school object relations play therapist, really understood the psychology of children. And I remember saying to her, maybe I just don't know how to love my baby. And she said, you change her diaper, you get up with her in the middle of the night, you feed her, you sing to her. Do you do all of those things? Do you rock her? Do you put music in your voice when you talk to her? I said, of course, I'm her mom. She's like, that's love. She doesn't have the higher cognitive capacity to be like, does my mother love me exactly the way I wish to be loved? She's not Shakespeare. She's a newborn. Like, she was like, a, you know, 3-month-old or whatever. She's a baby. And just that wisdom of Esther saying, like, what you do is love to the baby. What you're thinking, the baby doesn't know that you have self-doubt. The baby just knows my mommy is singing to me. And that's the voice that I've heard when I was in the womb. And I love that voice. That's all she knows. She doesn't even know that there are tears streaming down your face as you're singing to her. She just hears you singing to her. She's like, of course you love her. And, you know, right after that, I think, like, the feeding calmed down. She started sleeping a little bit more. I started figuring out, like, the whole graduate school new mom thing. Like, it started falling into place. And suddenly I realized how much I love this baby and, like, that I always did. But that self-doubt from those voices in my childhood, that really, it packed such a punch. I don't know that that person intended to harm me in the way that I was harmed. But I feel like that's where post-traumatic parenting comes in, where is that like a trauma? Would, like, you know, the eerie music start playing in a movie when I heard that voice in my childhood? No. But it really did a number on me when I became a mom. So you have that thing, like, you were learning disabled and, you know, going through school, it was really hard to learn because, you know, you had learning differences. Then you become a mom. I don't know how to do this. I've never known how to do anything. My poor kid has me for a mom. It's all going to come up.
Oh, it's up every vulnerability, right?
Yeah.
Blast it open, basically. Like, everything's our game.
Yeah, and it can't not. That means you love your kid. That every vulnerability is getting blasted open means you love them.
Yeah, and I think doing the work means you love them as well, right? So you're calling attention to a need that you have, that, and you want to, you know, motherhood makes you feel like you want to just be the best version of yourself. And a lot of times it means, well, I want to work on this because I don't want to pass it along. And so it's an opportunity to, you know, get treatment or process it or work through it with, or, you know, there are lots of strategies I describe in Rattled for how to manage that as well and move through it. So it's so important.
One concept you bring up in Rattled that I really like is that idea of self-directed neuroplasticity. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I love self-directed neuroplasticity. So that comes, it's sort of like you know, I build that up throughout the book. And then in the last chapter, I'm like, but this is all leading to this self-directed neuroplasticity when we actually have more power and control over our growth, right? And there are certain things we can do to facilitate those neurological changes to go even further, right? So it's rising to every relentless challenge, right? But it's also like changing our thoughts and challenging those cognitive distortions and healing old wounds so we can grow even further, right? Because you've never been in this place before, but you have also neuroplastic changes on your side. So it's sort of surfing that tide of neuroplasticity to your advantage. And so there are some strategies in the book that I recommend that are very practical to help, you know, enhance that process, but also just the bigger foundations of having solid mental health treatment is a big one as well, because you can't have that self-directed neuroplasticity growth and exponential growth if your mental health is not intact. So this sort of comes later.
Yeah, if you have that foundation, or at least even if you like know to have that foundation. I love even like the title of your book, like it's rattled, right? You're rattled because like you had a way, you had a coping strategy, and then this came and this completely rattled you. And of course, the play on words with rattle, but like just that idea that as long as you do have that foundation that like, I want to use this opportunity, that this is going to be hard, but worth it.
Right. And so it's all about building on that and the momentum from the neuroplastic changes, but how to make it bigger, right? How to make it better, how to make it work for you. And also viewing yourself as an asset, right? This is the incredible period of maternal brain development, and you are going to be more brilliant and I think better than ever. Honestly, this is my messaging, better than ever when you self-direct neuroplasticity, use out all of these strategies and foundations to your advantage.
Yeah, I love what you say about mommy brain and that idea that, like, yeah, so my brain forgets the unimportant stuff. This is good.
Yeah. Well, it's synaptic pruning, what you were talking about, right? So the stuff that you're not using or it's not important for early motherhood is going to be sort of tossed aside. And it's really fine-tuning and priming itself for new learning. And I say it's like Marie Kondoing your brain to give mom the leg up in caregiving, right? So it's just reorganizing, reframing, and discarding the useless, right? And you're building all these new pathways in your brain. And so the way I explain it to my patients is that imagine, you know, building a new highway, right? So first you start with a path in the woods, right? And you have to sort of break down all the debris and cut through, and then you start walking the path. And then you keep walking over it and becomes more solidified. And then eventually you put pavement over it. And eventually you take your car out on it and it becomes faster and faster to get through. But those old highways that you don't need anymore, sort of that's when the shrubbery is growing over it and you're not using that anymore. So that's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about the potential for your maternal brain to build high-speed highways, right? But you have to know what kind of engine you're working with in the car. I mean, it's not overnight that you can go from 0 to 100.
And you know those signs in stores where it says like, please pardon our mess while we reorganize or while we undergo construction? That's what's happening. Like we do that with teenagers all the time. Like no kidding. They're going from little kids to like adults. It's huge. There's going to be mess while they're reconstructing. But then they're amazing, right? You got to get through that, like those years in a good way, right? You go through it with them. It's not like, oh, let's just like ignore the teenage years. Let's go through it with them. But then they're amazing people. One day you meet them as like young adults. You're like, wow, you're a person with your own whole unique life. This is so cool. But that takes time. In the same way, motherhood, yeah, there's going to be mess while we're reconstructing. That makes sense.
Absolutely.
What was the most like surprising research you came across when you were like sort of doing your background for the book?
That's a great question. I think coming across some of the research that was really focusing on some of the cognitive boosts that mothers were getting. And there was this JAMA article, Dr. Jody Paluski, she wrote it. And it was like, it's time to rebrand mommy brain. And she was talking about how the research in support of actual cognitive deficits is sparse, right? So mommy brain is subjectively real, right? We experience the fogginess, the forgetfulness, the lapses in memory. That usually resolves around 2 years. But in line with that, the picture is incomplete. And when you actually look at the research showing significant differences between mothers and non-mothers in those cognitive deficits, there's not strong support for that. But like understanding and seeing some of the actual boosts, right? So moms have increased cognitive efficiency, visual memory, and some of the other boosts. Like, it's really amazing.
Yeah. I feel like there's also, we're so used to self-blame and shame and like with things like that, but we're trying to balance things that are really difficult, right? A baby is not predictable. And if you're going back to work, or if you're, you know, or even if you're like working from home, but like there are projects that have time limits, but suddenly your baby wants to nurse for an hour instead of for 20 minutes, your kid throws up, you're like, these things happen. And if, it's almost like that rebrand of, but I'm acting in accordance with my values. I had that conversation when I was on internship in a hospital. I had a coworker who was the same age as me, but was not yet a mom. I was a mom of like several small children. She told me after she had a baby, she called me, she's like, I owe you an apology. I used to be very judgmental. You were always like running in, you know, you were on time, but you were like running in 2 seconds before the meeting was starting. And like, you know, you were in a rush to get home. And I, you know, and now I'm a mom and I realize like, wow, it's really hard to work and have kids. And I said, you know, I appreciate you having the courage to tell me that, right? Because sometimes I did feel judged, to be honest. Like, I felt that vibe. We're clinical psychologists. We can feel vibes. The 5 minutes early is on time and, you know, on time is late kind of vibe that you get if, like, both of us, right, we have degrees from very prestigious universities. There is that culture of perfectionism and, like, you know, being a professional. So when you're on internship, of course, you're one of the clinical psychologists on staff. You know, you need to be professional. And yeah, there were definitely times that I was doing things, but it took me time to like quiet that chatter in my head of like, you're running late again. How could you do this? Manage your time better. I acted in accordance with my values. My kid needed something. And rather than running out the door and leaving my kid, I spent those 5 minutes helping her with whatever, which meant, yeah, I hit traffic and I was commuting an hour. So yeah, and that traffic gets exponential, but I acted in accordance with my values. So I'll run into the meeting exactly on time. Okay.
That's impressive that you got through internship here with several small littles. I mean, I always think about that, like graduate students and physicians in residency as well.
Yeah, I still have PTSD from some of that because it definitely is incompatible.
I can imagine.
I actually have a really nice story. I've said it on this podcast before, but it just bears repeating, which was the way I got my dissertation chair and the way I got my funding was I was taking a course with this incredible professor, Sandy McLowery, who was a temperament researcher. That's what my research background is in, childhood temperament. And her class was in this giant lecture hall that had this little projection room, and I needed to pump. So after class, I realized that there was nowhere to pump in NYU. Like here we are, like, you know, we're all studying attachment theory and object relations, and there's nowhere to pump for like moms. Like, I had to like beg for permission to go into like one of the study cubicles and be able to lock the door so I could pump. It was just, so this projection room was great because it was private. No one was coming in there after class and I could sit down and pump and like decompress from class. And one day she came in to get something she had left behind. She heard a noise coming from the projection room. So she went to look. Mind you, projection rooms weren't used anymore in NYU. Like the technology had evolved. Like now you could just use a smart board. So she walked into the projection room and I was nursing. And she didn't say much to me. She was just, I was pumping. I mean, so she didn't say much to me and she walked out. A week later, I come in to apply for a grant funded like research assistantship and she was interviewing me. And I was so sure that like, forget it, I'm not getting the job. So I said something to her. I took up my courage and I was like, you know, I know you walked in on me pumping and I just wanted to let you know that doesn't affect my commitment as a grad student. Because I had to say that, right? Like, God forbid you have like somehow a, you know, a different priority other than being a graduate student. She said, actually, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but the fact that I walked in on you pumping tells me how committed you are to both being a great mom and a great graduate student. And that's exactly who I want on my team. So I'm not supposed to tell you this, but you definitely have the research assistantship.
Wow. Amazing.
And it's just messed up that what I was expecting was censure and criticism.
100%. And I think that's why the cultural adoption of mommy brain, like, you know, we have this lens that like mothers are supposed to be perfect and any inclination that something is wrong or off, it means that there's a deficit and something wrong. So that's why I think mommy brain came about. And also Jody says this as well. So, and I agree with her. And it reminded me, your story is beautiful. And it reminded me of a story that when I was actually dropping off Rattled at one of the local stores here, I was talking to the store owner. She's probably 60 years old now, but she has a daughter who just gave birth. And she said that back in her day, she worked for a law firm And she was eager to get back to work. And I think about a year after she had actually, you know what, it was a lot longer. She went back to work after taking a pause, and she thought she would never get the job. And the head lawyer was like, actually, you know, I'm going to actually give you a promotion because you were just having babies, right? And you were learning all of these skills that are going to be so helpful, right, for the work environment and for your test. So I'm actually going to give you a promotion. And she ended up leading a team of like 20 people. And I was like, wow, he was ahead of his time to sort of see that and see the value in a mother. And I think that's what, you know, your advisor was saying as well. Like, I mean, maybe she went through it herself. She's a mother herself. She knows how hard it is. You know, when that recognition hits, it feels great to be seen, right? And I think we as mothers, we don't, I'm on the board for Mother Untitled. And that's also another piece to this where she's reframing that pause as an opportunity. And I completely see it that way, that you're just becoming, you know, I call early motherhood a course in an employee development program.
It's like emotional intelligence boot camp.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, yeah, you were an asset to that team. And I'm glad that she recognized you in that way. And it must have felt so good.
It felt so supportive. I just like, it was like, I was so expecting like this criticism and just got support, which was not the common experience that I think moms in grad school get. And yeah, there's a lot of ways to be an academic nowadays. You know, we're not all English professors with tweed jackets smoking cigars in Oxford, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Also, it's so interesting because like in my spare time, I work out, I do martial arts, and I actually have a training partner who is a police officer. And she said that she once got this like major compliment on her de-escalation skills. Like she can just go into a situation and calm everybody down. She's like, it's basically parenting. Like you're very upset and you're very upset. I want to hear from both of you. Like, this is what we do with warring three-year-olds. We can do it with a domestic dispute as well.
Oh, we're masters at de-escalation, right? And patience and problem solving on the fly and leadership. So, yeah.
Yeah. And if it takes time to learn, sure, it's going to take time to learn. This is all hard stuff. This is not simple.
Right.
I just feel like for everybody listening, I want to point out, like the two of us have some pretty impressive degrees. Where's your degree from?
So I got my PhD from University of Rhode Island, and I got my master's from Loyola University in Maryland. And then I did my pre-doctoral internship at Yale School of Medicine. I did two postdocs. So my first postdoc was at Mass General Hospital, Harvard Medical School. And my second postdoc was at University of Colorado Anschutz Medical Campus.
Wow. So yeah, we and both of us have like impressive credentials. We're both clinical psychologists. Neither of us, right? Like I have my PhD from NYU, also two postdocs, also like all that kind of like major clinical training. And both of us were so rattled by the experience of becoming moms. This is normal. If you're feeling that way, it's not like, oh, if I only would have this like really fancy degree and tons of training and I would, you know all this stuff, I'd be fine. It's not true.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like if you're in the thick of it, if you're paying attention, if you're really engaged and wanting to be a good mother, I think that like, it's really tough. Right. It's going to be a major struggle in so many ways. I mean, it has to be. It's just so relentless.
Yeah. And it feel if we let it, it can really give us insight into what things are like. I'm thinking of a post-traumatic parent whose mom had OCD and she always had the specter of OCD over her. And when she became a mom, she called me up and she said, I think I'm developing OCD, which is a risk, right? Postpartum OCD is sometimes an onset. But when we were talking, I said, you're actually becoming a mom. Like this whole like, wait, did I sterilize that nipple for long enough? And all of those kind of thoughts. You can now have some empathy for what your mom went through. But this is still within the realm of normal, what new mothers feel like as you're this massively steep learning curve of, oh, wait, I'm supposed to sterilize the nipples. Oh, wait, did that pacifier fall on the floor? Like, am I supposed to use it? Not like that's what it feels like. Yes. OCD, it feels like that a lot more intensely for a lot longer. This is a very normal sensation of like, I'm doing something wrong. This kid's going to die.
Agreed. I mean, we, you know, 90% of parents experience those unwanted intrusive thoughts, right? And it doesn't necessarily have to be OCD. But if you go further along the spectrum, of course, then it can be a symptom of actual postpartum OCD. And we know that postpartum OCD is actually more common in mothers. So you're instead of the base rate being, you know, 1 to 2% in the general population, it's actually 9%. And I'm sure it's an underestimate in postpartum mothers, you know, because you imagine like you're, or you understand like your biology, like your brain is being primed to be hypervigilant, look out for danger, right? Because your baby is 100% dependent on you to keep them alive. That's a big responsibility. Like you're going to be aware of a lot more, hence anxious of a lot more.
Yeah, I can't even imagine you doing that like with a NICU baby, like right when COVID started. That must have been terrifying.
It was. I didn't sleep for 5 days. And I was like, I thought I was supposed to start hallucinating after 3 days. I didn't hallucinate, thank God. But I was like ready for it. And it was 5 days of me not being able to calm myself. I was just trying to think my way out of every, you know, what scenario, like, what if I get sick? What if my husband gets sick? He works, he's a physician. He was working on the front lines. What if like, I don't sleep and I go crazy? I can't go to the hospital because there's COVID there, right? And so we can't have anyone help us because, you know, we had a rule, no one in, no one out because of COVID. It was terrifying for me.
Yeah, I can't imagine that. Like that, my youngest baby was born at the tail end of COVID. He's 2.5 now. And he was also a NICU baby. So all the decontamination and the fear and the germs, it's just really, really scary. I just remember this many years ago when I was in grad school, there was a cartoon that I found in I wish I had cut it out. It showed a woman with her eyes were like pools of exhaustion. And it said, "We can't help you, Mrs. Jones. We've never met a working mom with insomnia before." And I'm like, really? Because I feel like most working moms can't sleep.
Right.
The baby's finally quiet. The house is maybe clean enough. You're ready for bed. You even took a shower and your brain won't let you sleep. I think that always happens.
Absolutely. And what about when you have a newborn and you have to wake up at certain intervals? So like there's more pressure to sleep in between and like you can't fall asleep just like that, right? It's hard to fall asleep. And then by the time you fall asleep, the baby's up for the next feeding. I mean, it's just like so hard. And we know that sleep is a mood stabilizer. And so taking that away, which is, you know, typical in early motherhood, really destabilizes us. So yeah.
Yeah. So we're meant to feel unstable.
Yes.
Yeah. So many challenges. I love that your book is just normalizing all of this. And also not only normalizing, but turning it into a strength. Like, let's just remember this is a strength. Like, I wish I had that book. It took me a long time to come to, wait, I didn't do something wrong that I'm late to the meeting or I'm just running in on time. I acted in accordance with my values. I helped my kid find her, you know, missing component of her science project instead of leaving her to like twist in the wind because that's actually what I value.
Right. I mean, I wish I had this book. You know, this book wasn't written until after I had already been through it with my second child. I wish I had it before my first child. So I could have had that knowledge of how to, you know, make the most of the transition and feel empowered when I was feeling so lost and like everyone else knows how to mother automatically and everyone's bonding with their baby immediately. And, you know, I must not be doing something right. Like it shouldn't be this hard.
Yeah, but it should be this hard because it's valuable and valuable things are hard.
It is this hard.
Yeah, it is this hard. So like you being able to say that and quantify that is so important for anybody, for everybody. I think we all try to write the book that we would have needed at some point.
Yeah.
Many years ago when I became a mom, I really wanted to know what PTSD, what impact my PTSD would have on my parenting. My oldest daughter is in her mid-20s. It was a long time ago. And there was no research. I'm a geek. I went to the library. There was nothing. There's not a single article, book, anything about the impact of maternal PTSD on babies or on parenting. Nothing.
I think your book is so needed. So I'm so excited for that to come out and to read it. You know, right? We both come from this academic background. So our natural inclination is to go to PubMed or the library. And so I realized, you know, moms don't have time to peruse PubMed. Right. So I sort of did the legwork there and I wanted to include a lot of science in my book in like an easy, digestible format. But there's so much information out there. And I think especially on social media, you know, everyone has a voice. And while it can be great to have lots of voices, right, we want that. We want lots of different perspectives. It's hard to sort of discern, you know, what's quality information, what's coming from the science, what's coming from the research. And so I really wanted to make sure that, you know, the book that I put out was in line with that.
I think you really achieved that. I think that people are going to find it. I think it's also really good reading for mental health professionals, maybe who haven't been through it or it's been a while, just to remember, because like you're saying, a lot of new moms do come into therapy because it's that moment of upheaval. And just to really put that research up front and center, this is what this process is like. It makes sense. It's like that. It should be like that. Don't beat yourself up that it's like that. And here's what to do about it.
Right. And to empower them, right? And so you can empower your patients. They can feel empowered themselves, right? That's something really helpful to hold on to see themselves as an asset. Like I wrote the back to work chapter so that mothers would feel empowered as an asset to go back into the workforce, in whatever way that looks like, in whatever capacity, but to understand that like you're coming to it with a lot of strengths and to really see it that way. I think mothers can feel when they're going back to work like, oh, you know, I'm behind, right? Or I'm not necessarily an asset. My mind is in two places right now. And so I provide some dialogue around that and just how to navigate conversations with, you know, your boss, your team, and with yourself.
Yeah, it's so important because you're right. I think we apologize for things that are actually strengths.
Like own it and bring it.
You are right. I am a mom, which means I know how to multitask and have emotional, all that stuff. It's all there.
All of that. I'm rising to every relentless challenge. I mean, I am strong.
Yeah. What's your next project now? Like the book launch and?
To be determined, honestly. I'm trying to, you know, the book is released on April 30th. So I feel like I'm still like in gestation, like pregnant, and I'm going to deliver April 30th. And then it's sort of like it's out there in the real world. And I'm going to sit with that for a while, see how it goes. And then, you know, I'm trying not to move ahead to the next project yet. I really want to sit with this and sort of nurture this baby along a little bit. And then I'll allow myself to sort of think about next steps.
Yeah, I love that. And where else can people find you besides the book?
So definitely follow me on Instagram. So at Dr. Nikki Pensack. I also have a website, www.drnicolemoyopensack.com. So those are probably the two best ways.
Okay. And then what we're going to do is we're going to put the links to your Instagram and, you know, all that stuff in the show notes and, you know, the pre-order link for the book in the show notes so that people can find it. And your TED Talk, so that people can find it. You should really check out the TED Talk. It really, I love the way you like very concisely brought in all the important points really, really well and in a really empowering fashion. So people should definitely check it out. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it. I think this is one of those books that every post-traumatic parent should read because especially those who are, I feel like all of us, because we need that normalization, but there's a lot of post-traumatic parents who are still contemplating parenting, pregnancy, you know, right now they're parenting inner children. And this is a really good way to prepare.
Yeah. Thank you so much. This was such an incredible conversation and thoughtful dialogue. I love talking about trauma and post-traumatic parenting. I love your take on it. And I'm so excited for your book.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate it. I'm here on social media to be descriptive, not prescriptive. I'm here to educate, inform, and hopefully entertain, but never to treat. If listening to this podcast helps you realize that you need therapy, I am all for that. But podcasts aren't therapy. Please reach out to a mental health professional licensed in your jurisdiction. You'll be glad you did. Wish post-traumatic parenting was a talk show, not a podcast? You have a question for me or for my guests? Great news. You can ask those questions by following me on Instagram. My handle is at Dr. Kozlowitz Psychology. It's also in the show notes. I love it when people reach out, DM, or post a question. Who knows? Your question might spark an entire episode. Come join our community. We get it. We're post-traumatic parents too. Can't wait to hear from you.